Before I speak to Graham Simpson about his novel, The Best of Adam Sharp, there are songs that recur again and again in his novel. In fact, he's also put out a playlist, a Spotify playlist at the back. There's one that has a special place in Adam and Angelina's romance.
In 1978, Bruce Springsteen gave me the opportunity to write some lyrics for this song. And I was able to express within it my feelings for my late husband, Fred Sonic Smith, the love of my life.
Ah, the great Patti Smith. But beautifully referencing, of course, Bruce Springsteen. And this comes up in the latest novel by Graham Simpson called The Best of Adam Sharp. And, oh, the old midlife crisis. A crisis or a time of your life when you take stock and think, what am I doing? Could I have made better choices? And that is at the heart of Graham Simpson's new novel. We meet Brit, Adam Sharp, IT contractor, a musician. Well, he doodles around on the piano. He's about to turn 50. And he's online and an email pops up from a woman he met 22 years ago in Australia. After all these years, it simply says, hi. So is she the lost love of Adam's life? What does it mean? Does it represent a second chance? Graham Simpson, of course, we know him. He's the author of The Rosie Project and The Rosie Effect, and has come in as a very special friend of 666 Afternoons and done Canberra Close Up with us in the past. He spoke last night at the ANU's Meet the Authors series and is with me in the studio. How lovely to see you, Graham.
Good afternoon, Alex. Great to be back again. Yeah. And if you knew the number of times that I've listened to Patti Smith singing Because the Night in the last 12 months,
I just had to do it to you.
No. When I was writing the book, I had the playlist, and I would just play it over and over in the gym, you know, just to listen to it, to hopefully that would sort of subconsciously permeate my writing.
Well, that's actually going to be one of my questions. And I contacted you earlier in the day, Graham, and I said, well, I set up the piano for you because I just assumed you could play the piano from reading this book.
Well, I've got to tell you, I'm so delighted. You're not the first. My Dutch publisher said for the Dutch launch, shall we have a piano? Do you mind playing in public? And I said, you know, there's just this one problem. But, you know, I spent so much time having people say to me, you must have Asperger's or you couldn't have written Don Tillman. And now it's, you must play the piano. So I'm feeling flattered by that.
These are burdens you're just going to have to bear. Well, yeah, it's really convincing.
Well, look,
I'm not a piano player, though.
No. Look, probably the nicest compliment I had was from Zoe Morrison, whose debut novel, it's called Music and Freedom, about a concert pianist, is out at the moment. And she was, in fact, herself a concert pianist. And she said, yeah, I could really feel a piano. You got that right. Really, it came from just discussions with a good friend of mine who plays piano.
So that really was the ultimate compliment.
Well, I was very pleased. I mean, when you're writing fiction, you're obviously trying to make your characters convincing, so it's nice for people to think that.
Graham Simpson, there's so many reasons to love you, but I really love the fact that last night, while you're on this national tour, you've said to all the people holding events, I want to profile new Australian writers, give them 5 minutes before I speak. And last night it was the incredible ANU's Rosie Stevens.
Yeah, extraordinary. I just look and thought, wow. I mean, I was 4 years ago, I was way behind where she is now, and she must be, I don't know, 40 years younger or something than me. So she's going to be fantastic.
But
she is.
It's a great thing to do. What gave you the idea to give this space to new writers?
Look, I think that there is just, everybody is waiting for that break. Everybody who hasn't yet been published is waiting for the break. Look, quick story. I went to a bookshop not that long ago, or a couple of years ago, actually. A guy gave me an entire manuscript, printed manuscript, and said to me, would you have a look at it for me? And, you know, I get asked that sort of thing very often. And this time, it was a bookshop that had been supportive. I didn't say no. And it sat by my bed, you know, for at least a year. And I just felt so guilty about that. And I finally put it aside and didn't read it. And 2 weeks ago, it won the Miles Franklin.
Oh, you're joking.
I'm not.
Oh, that's a great story. You know, there's a group in London of publishers that rejected Harry Potter, and they all go out for lunch every year.
Well, you know, and Alec Patrick found a publisher. Mm. He found a publisher, but it is that break. I had people reject the Rosie Project and so on, particularly when it was a screenplay. I had no chance getting it through, and then rewriting it as a book. I got it there. And you just think, look, if 5 minutes gives somebody a little more exposure, a little practice if they're an emerging writer, because you've got to learn to speak in front of large audiences, answer the questions and so forth, well, you know, that's no big deal. And for the audiences, they're getting to see someone besides me as well, and that's not a bad thing.
Well, it's a lovely and generous thing to do, and I love that you come from that spirit, and because I know you thank a lot of people in your career, don't you?
Oh, well, and with full justification, I owe it to a lot of people.
Graham Simpson's with me. So, Graham, tell me about Adam Sharp.
Okay, Adam Sharp, well, you've done a terrific job of it. Adam Sharp is a man who hasn't, you know, who is still got ties to the past. I mean, even his love of music is 60s and 70s music, and Alec Sharp wasn't born till the late 60s, so he didn't grow up with this music. And he's got this enormous nostalgia for this woman that he met way back when. And when she gets back in touch with him, he's going to have to make a choice. His long-term relationship or this rekindled love. And for me, it was an opportunity to explore not just how we deal with the past, that's certainly one aspect, but the nature of love. I mean, the Rosie Project is a romantic comedy. It's about romance, it's about courtship, and we know what that feels like for that first year or so, and then we live happily ever after, as though it's going to be a replay of that first year, which of course it isn't. And with the Rosie Effect, I wanted to explore that. And then with The Best of Adam Sharp, I wanted to contrast the two. Mm-hmm. Because in romance writing, in romantic comedy, romantic love is the highest value. There's nothing better than romantic love. So if you're in a relationship and romantic love comes along, what does that mean?
What does it mean?
What does it mean morally, emotionally? Yeah.
What if this song is played when you see... You gave me the playlist, Graham.
Okay, go for it.
What if someone with big brown eyes comes in from 22 years ago?
Well, that's what I was aiming for. I wanted these songs to be on the page. They had to be songs that people knew, and I wanted people to at least be able to identify about half of the songs. So I couldn't be too cool for school and putting in hipster stuff and so forth. They had to be mainstream, and I went for classic rock in the end. But... yeah, I wanted people.
And it's also music you love.
Well, most of it's music I love.
I'm not playing Claire. It's all right.
No. The one song in the book I really don't like, but it has a purpose. And look, one of the things that drove me here was the fact that I actually recount the incident in the book. I was at a retreat when I was back in information technology business days. We went away on this retreat. We had one of our staff played piano, and we were all clustered around the piano while he played a few songs. One of the guys asked him to play the Bob Seger song, Against the Wind. And this big guy who just seemed emotionally closed, suddenly he's got tears running down his face and so forth. And it just reflected that there are guys, particularly men, who... only open up emotionally. You'll never see them cry except when they're listening to music. And we've got the soundtrack, and I wanted to put that on the page, as it were, and just use that to evoke emotions.
I haven't got Against the Wind. I've got this.
Rows and floors of angel hair, and ice cream castles in the air, and feather canyons everywhere. Looked at clouds that way, but now they only block the sun. They rain and they snow on everyone. So many things I would have done, but clouds got in my way.
Oh, Graham.
Great slow version there. You know, at the Melbourne launch, we had Deborah Conway come along.
Did you?
And she sang that. And it was one of the great versions of it. She did a fantastic job.
Her voice
job.
Would be perfect for that song.
Yeah, she was great, yeah.
It is one of the great songs, and I love it that is part of this, because Adam is about to turn 50. And it got me thinking, we're living longer these days. And yes, you can be in a relationship for a long time. Has it been the right choice? Is it the right place to stay? And they're all the kind of questions you throw up.
And coming up to 50, you can say, I've still got 30 or 40 years of life left. Yeah, my dad's 90. I mean, you've got all that time. How are you going to spend it?
Was there a catalyst for you wanting to come from that side of love rather than, as you say, with the Rosie Project, to finding love, to, you know, where is love at? Was there...
I guess it was actually going from the Rosie Project to the Rosie Effect. Mm. I lost a bunch of readers there. I gained some new ones, which is great, but the readers I lost were people who only wanted to read about romantic love. And really, romantic love is no longer a big issue for me in my life in terms of finding a partner and falling in love. What's a much bigger issue for me is, you know, I've been in a relationship. I've been married for 27 years. How do I make that continue to thrive and live in? And I think that's an issue that many of us face. You know, how do you do it? What about the threat from outside? In fact, there was a story. Should I tell you that prompted this? Okay, so I've told the story a few times now, but the stimulus for The Best of Adam Sharp was that my wife and I were holidaying in France, and my wife had kept up a correspondence with this guy from Manchester who she had who'd been a boyfriend around the time that I met her. So they'd kept in touch, and I thought, yeah, whatever, you know, what can go wrong? He's in Manchester, she's in Melbourne, we're married, he's married. And she got the email, and it said, you know, my wife and I have split up. And my wife said to me, oh, really, we should invite him over to sort of, you know, cry on my shoulder and so on. I thought, this doesn't sound like a good idea. But, you know, she was pretty insistent, and you start to think, well, you know, what if there's no one else for him to talk to, et cetera. Anyway, he came and stayed with us. He was very gracious. He was lovely and so on. And, you know, by the end of it, I think my wife was the one who was feeling a bit frustrated. he actually said to me at the end, he said, mate, you may have saved my life. And he wasn't talking about just then. He was talking about 25 years ago.
Because it wouldn't have worked out.
by taking Anne off his hands. But, it all worked out fine there. But I thought, what if they had really carried a torch for each other all these years, and now one marriage was gone, and maybe what if the marriage had gone because of that?
Can you ever go back, Graham?
Can you ever go back? That's one of the questions.
Or is it just the rose-coloured glasses of being in your 20s and that kind of love and youth and passion?
And I mean, Adam is sitting in his room. He's in a long-term relationship. It's functional, but the passion's gone out of it. And when he plays music, when he listens to music, he's always thinking of Angelina, the girl from the past. And it's a fantasy. It's okay, isn't it? It's just fantasy. And then, bang, he gets the email and suddenly fantasy is reality. What's he going to do about it?
I think he's playing this, actually.
Hey Jude, don't make it bad. Take a sad song and make it better. Remember to let her into your heart. Then you can start to make it better. Hey.
Well, that is the quintessential familiar song. I said I didn't want to be too cool for school. I wanted songs that people knew. My daughter was on exchange in Belgium, and she said that was. And my daughter's 24. Is it a couple of years ago on exchange program in Belgium? And she said they played that song for sing along, and that's a song that everybody from all these different nationalities in the audience knew. So Adam's a bit disparaging about it. He says, you know, the second half is just na 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 over and over, and that's what he feels about his life.
I forgot that it goes for 7 minutes
and 11 seconds. I can remember, I think it was great value when I bought it as a single.
Graham Simsion is with me, and we're talking about his latest novel, The Best of Adam Sharp. Just going back to that, and I love that story, that real life story of your wife and yourself and the guy that she'd stayed in contact, because in this book there is a discussion of curing an unhealthy addiction. And I suppose a lot of us are familiar with the old story that the kid gets caught smoking a cigarette and then the parent comes along and says, okay, smoke the whole packet.
Yep,
and they end up vomiting and that's it. They'll never touch nicotine again. It's a little bit of that kind of model, isn't it?
Well, I actually compare it, and this is a family show, I guess, so I won't go into too much detail.
But I've already played the three-way, but...
but in John Irving's book, Hotel New Hampshire, there's a very inappropriate relationship between two people who should not be together, and she eventually decides, she says, come on over, let's just get it out of our systems, and over again until he begs for mercy, and you know, that supposedly gets it out of his system. And it was the same sort of thing we talked about in the book, yeah.
Angelina and her husband Charlie, who's, you know, you're sort of trying to work out. In the first half of the book, tell us about Angelina in the first half.
Okay, well, Angelina in the first half of the book, most of that, well, it's set in the present day with Angelina getting in touch with Adam, but then most of what you read in that first half of the book is the flashback to their relationship back in Australia and why it doesn't work out. We know from the beginning that it terminated, but what went wrong? So that's really the first half of the book. Were you looking for me to elaborate on that?
Well, I think she's adorable in the first half. She's a sort of ingenue. She's troubled. She's a sort of in the spotlight because she's in a soapy.
And then she grows up.
Yeah.
Because when he meets her again 22 years later, she's a somewhat more sophisticated, mature woman, which is nice. I mean, she's actually grown probably more than Adam has. But there's clearly something, and she's married. You pointed out she's married to this guy, Charlie, who we don't meet till the second half of the book, not really. And something is clearly going on in the marriage, and Adam arrives on the scene wanting to win her back and realises, you know, there's actually a husband in the way here, but he's not quite sure why she's brought him into the life again, and there's clearly something strange going on with the marriage. I mean, I actually characterise the first half of the book as being like High Fidelity and the second half as being like Sex, Lies and Videotape.
Because, I find little to recommend Angelina in the second half.
You don't like Angelina?
Not in the second half. I thought, oh, you are a spoilt, selfish brat.
Well, look, this is really interesting.
Charlie's running up there with coffees for her. Everything is being done for her.
Well, one of my US editors thought exactly that, but came back and said, we think Angelina would be more relatable if she did a few things around the house.
It's true. She just pops down looking gorgeous in the white jeans and the pink singlet and, you know, that sort of...
But I have to say, your view is not the only one. I think that readers tend to be on Team Angelina or Team Claire, you know, Claire being the long-term relationship.
And is this what you wanted to do to us,
oh, yeah,
the reader?
I want you to flip a bit. I mean, I want the individual reader, really, not to be locked in on one side, but to be doubting. And I wanted the people to be human. I mean... I think I would like to feel at the end of the book that however you felt about Angelina or Claire or Charlie or Adam, who are our four protagonists, that their behaviour was motivated, that it was meant well, for want of a better term, that they were struggling to do the best they could under difficult circumstances, and that always you think, yeah, there, but for the grace of God, you never know.
Is physical attraction and nostalgia and, you know, the past enough to throw away a marriage and three children? There's three children involved as well.
See, there you are. Here comes the argument.
Whoa. Let me play this. Adam Sharp, he just nails that on the piano. I'm talking to Graham Simsion about...
Well, see, the funny thing is I listen to these songs now and they are inextricably tied to the scenes from the book.
They are.
And this is poor Adam. He's out on a date with another girl and Angelina walks in. He's only met her once before and she realises that he's walked into the bar to see him. And he doesn't know what to do to signal to her that... that he's interested, that he's in the bar without being rude to his date, and he ends up on the piano playing this song, and his date's horrified.
Well, she thinks that this is getting a bit heavy, early on.
First date.
deals with both of
them. 6 o'clock in the afternoon and an empty bar.
And I love this because it's in Fitzroy in Melbourne, which, you know, I lived for a while. And so
it's a real bar. It was inspired by a real place that my wife and I used to go in the 1980s. It was sort of one of those relatively few cocktail bars that they had there in Melbourne, yeah.
You put the bit of a poster on the wall and the sort of dark spaces and really unadorned in many ways.
That's where we had the launch in Melbourne. And it looked like it hadn't
changed
since the 80s.
Singing.
Yeah, yeah.
Graham Simpson is with me. So, look, I suppose it's about universal themes when it comes to this is the broader story of love.
Love and death and infidelity and threesomes and all those sorts of things.
Because what happens after that, you know, that first initial passion and marriage, is there any point to these great big long relationships? And they can be hard work.
Yeah, and look, you talk about how Angelina as a character is a bit unsympathetic to you and, you know, self-centred and so forth. How many people do we know who have walked out on long-term marriages with children and so forth for what we would see as being selfish reasons? But they do it, and they probably still think of themselves as good people, and it happens often enough that I think we need to come to terms with it. Particularly around infidelity. I had the Gene character in the Adam books, and he just divided people for something, you know, because he had this open marriage, and some people just felt that he was utterly beyond the pale, wasn't even worth looking at. Others found him, you know, amusing, figure of fun, whatever.
Mm. So I'm not going to give away the ending, but do you think Adam makes the right choice, Graham?
I'll tell you, I wouldn't have made that choice. So I think he's a better man than I am. I think he makes a more noble choice than the choice that I would have made under the same circumstances. So, I felt the same way when I wrote The Rosie Project, that I actually thought Don Tillman's a better man than I am. In some ways, that lifts your thinking a little bit.
Graham Simpson's a great bloke. And in a devoted marriage. We'll just go out on a little bit of Lola. And you wanted to talk to Lola?
I want to talk to Lola. Look, I mean, I think the thing is that songs can have an emotional impact because of the associations rather than the content of the song. So for me, reading it, the most moving moment in the book is actually when Adam plays Lola, which is hardly a love song or anything in the normal sense, but it's to do with his relationship he has with his dad. And it's the first song. At the age of 7, Adam learns to play. He wants to learn to play a song. It's playing on the radio. He learns to play Lola, which would have driven his poor mother mad and so forth. Yeah.
And it's the last time he sees his dad.
And it's the last time he sees his dad, yeah. So, and that, you know, the relationship he has with his dad is actually, you know, that's, I guess, where Adam's psychology comes from, where his longing, which he then projects onto Angelina, comes from.
There are many, many layers. Graham, always love to see you. Thank you so much.
Let's go out on Lola. Great.